on our class now. So today is the 22nd April 2021, a Thursday. We'll be continuing from this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, Teachings from the Adapted Verses of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. We are at page 215. Just relax body and mind, then maintain some more attention, and we will have our usual half an hour of awareness-based meditation. We will offer like, so that you can start your meditation. The sole intent of awareness-based meditation is to develop the stability of awareness within ourselves. To be aware, you must stop thinking. When you don't think, your awareness nature is there. So to develop this awareness meditation is relatively easy when you understand. What I normally teach you all is the four support. First support is relax. Relax into every mind state that arises. Ensure that your body and mind completely relax. Relax means at ease. No issue, nothing. Just let things be and be at peace. So relax. Then maintain awareness. Awareness is very important. When you are just aware, there is no thought. Whatever arises, let it arise. Whether it's sankhara activity or sense or contact or whatever activity or movement, just aware, finish. Aware, finish, let things be. Then maintain that awareness for as long as you can. Indirectly is to stabilize the awareness nature so that you don't think. To meditate is not to think. The moment you arise thinking or let sankhara activity arise, you cannot meditate. You cannot be the moment in silent awareness within to observe, to meditate, and to understand. So these three, first three support are very important. Always remember, relax into every mind state. Then maintain awareness. Third support is maintain this awareness for as long as you can. Then the last support is, of course, trust. Trust your nature to do the meditation. Do not interfere with your thought process or your thinking. So just let things be. Whatever that arise, allow it to arise. Just silence your mind, maintain awareness, stabilize that awareness nature. Okay? For those who are familiar with the old way, where you use method techniques and skillful means or object of meditation to train your mind to be peaceful, to be aware, you can also use that. But when you understand that the purpose of all this object of meditation, methods and technique is just to anchor the mind and train it in anapanasati, then technically you don't need to use them. Because when you understand that the spiritual faculties, they must be there for you to overcome the mental hindrance, then naturally, with the spiritual faculty developed, the mental hindrance will cease. Then your mind will be in the meditative state naturally. When it is in that state, then meditation becomes very easy. You just relax and maintain awareness. Then that is your true mind, meditative mind, the silent mind. So you're supposed to realize this and use it to meditate. Okay, I will set the alarm for half an hour and you can proceed with your silent awareness based meditation. And when the 30 minutes is up, the alarm will trigger and then I will ring the bell 3 times. Upon hearing the bell, slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. then these are the mind state you need to carry them over into your daily mindfulness, into your work environment, into your life activity. And this is how you develop the stability of daily mindfulness, leading to heedfulness throughout the day. Okay. The Sutra of Infinite Meaning states, this sutra is like a seed. Hundreds, thousands, millions, billions of seeds arising from it. And each in turn produces billions of seeds continuing on to infinity. In this way, one Dhamma can give rise to infinite meaning, and infinite meaning arises from one Dhamma. So this is basically what infinite meaning means. So the essence of infinite meaning is very profound. That's why this teaching is also very profound. And they call this teaching the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, Wu Liang Yi Qing. I will read on the commentaries, then we will share it. This is the essence of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. We often use fruit trees to make this analogy, whether it's longan, lychee, mango, apple, or peach. One fruit tree can produce many, many fruits. This all begins with one seed. From a seed, after a seed is planted, as causes and conditions converge, and as time passes, it will grow into a big tree, flowering and bearing fruits every year, according to the seasons. It may grow for decades, providing innumerable quantities of fruits. If we were to then plant the seed from these fruits, they would grow into countless trees. In this way, the number of trees would keep growing, continuing on to infinity. If we can understand the principle that one Dhamma can give rise to infinite meaning, and infinite meaning arises from one Dhamma, we can understand all phenomena in the world. A single candle can be used to light innumerous candles, and thus illuminate countless dark rooms. We all intrinsically had a luminous nature, means all living beings. But because it is covered or clouded by ignorance, we are not aware of it. We are like a candle that has not yet been kindled. We need to borrow a spark of light from someone else so that the light of our true nature can manifest. So this is a good analogy. Actually, each and every living being, we have a beautiful luminous nature, bright, beautiful, clear nature within. But because of avijja, ignorance, this nature has been clouded. That's why it cannot shine forth. And we are lost in the thinking or the thought process. Then we forgot that we have another nature, which is just awareness within. So it's just like a candle which has the potential to light up, but it has not yet been lighted, or they call kindled. So you need to borrow a spark of light from someone else so that the light of our true nature can manifest. So enlightenment is in a way similar. You have to detect your true mind, awaken your true mind, realize your true mind before you can overcome your delusion. Otherwise, you will continuously become heedless, lost in thought. When you are preoccupied with the thought process, the thinking mind, then you become deluded, deceived. Thinking that the thought process is what you are, sankara activity is what you are. You think you are a living being or a human being with a mind within. Yeah. Then you believe this mind can think, can perceive, can feel, can arise all the various aggregates of mind. Then you grasp on to these five aggregates of form and mind, which is essentially your thought process, your mundane mind. When you do that, you become deceived. You become deluded. So when this preoccupation with the unreal happens, then you lost yourself. You become deluded. Avijja set in, ignorance set in. And because of that, the primordial darkness created that delusion. So what you need is to return to your true nature, to realize that nature within. So that spark is very important. The ability to return to your original nature or to realize your true mind, which is the awareness nature, is very important. So all meditations center around this understanding. And this understanding is not easy. Most people, they never knew that they have two minds. The mundane mind and the true mind, they cannot separate. They thought all they have is just the thinking mind, the mundane mind. Yeah. And they believe that is what they are. That's how living beings get entangled. They can't come out of it. Okay, I'll read on with this introduction. Hopefully, it will make you understand your true nature easier. Then the commentary goes on to say, that spark can come from education. So education has a lot of meaning. Education is not just our usual society's education. Education is to educate, learning. So when you develop the true learning, which is the learning of the truth, then education becomes like a form of meditation to give rise to understanding. The Guizhou province of China has been poor and barren since ancient time. It seems this province is very poor. In fact, a few years back, we, Kayamita, we made a spiritual trip to Guizhou. Guizhou, according to what we heard from the tour guide, Tao Yu, is the second most poorest province in China. And Guizhou is very mountainous. The terrain, the geographical topography is very tough, not easy. There's a reason why when we were there, we were told when you come to Guizhou, you only observe two things. Qiao and Dong. Qiao Dong, Qiao Dong, Qiao Qiao Dong. So Qiao is bridges, fly over. Dong is tunnel. Because of the terrain topography, they need to build bridges. They need to build highway with tunnel to connect through to enable the infrastructure, to enable to have this communication, transportation in order for civilization to evolve, develop, and progress. But this province is very beautiful. We visited many beautiful places. If I'm not wrong, one of the very beautiful places is this mountain. They call it Fan Jing San. We went for that spiritual tree and we visited this mountain, which is very beautiful. And the nature there also very conducive for cultivation, for meditation. Then there are many spiritual way places. So that trip was very beautiful, very memorable. The nature was very beautiful too. And we really learned a lot of things from there. They also have a lot of tribal people, the minority people. So we are in fact blessed to have this experience. So here the author say, the Guizhou province of China has been poor and barren, very true, since ancient time, but no longer what it is now. Now Guizhou is very prosperous, very developed, all thanks to the government of China. The government has really opened up that province, then introduced a lot of beautiful infrastructure and program and project to develop the area. And the people there also have become more educated, more successful, and civilization has evolved and become very modern. Even in the recent past, it has been very difficult for children there to attend school. That was maybe many years ago. I think this book was written quite some time back. Because when we visited these places a few years back, it's already quite developed. I just checked what is the year. Oh yeah, they produced this book in the year 2015, which is 6 years ago. Yeah, maybe during that time, it's still quite poor, quite backward. So that is how Guizhou was. And because of that, according to the commentaries from the author, he said, even in the recent past, it has been very difficult for children there to attend school, because of the terrain. On average, only 2 or 3% of the children had the opportunity to get an education. That is very low. Because the province is remote and the living condition harsh, very few teachers are willing to relocate to this area. With the lack of qualified teacher, a child who graduated from elementary school or even one who has completed as little as the fourth grade can become a teacher. Therefore, the quality of education remained poor. Around 10 years ago, Ciji began providing tuition assistance in Guizhou. In addition to helping people improve their living condition, volunteers also encourage parents to send their children to school. They wanted their children all over the province. They wanted for children all over the province to have the opportunity to get an education. In recent years, as education gradually become more widely available, not only are the children able to go to elementary school, they can also go to middle school and high school and even to college. There is a young man named Xie Tong, who after graduating from college with a foreign language degree, resolutely declined high-paid job offered elsewhere and went back home to Laotian County, Guizhou, to become an English teacher. These are people who love their village, love their province, and willing to sacrifice, and come back. After returning to his hometown, he dedicated all his time to the education of his students. He taught three different grades and spent four nights a week tutoring his students. Not only was his salary meager, the area also often lacked basic necessities like vegetable, rice, cooking oil, and salt. But he never complained. He even started growing vegetables to share with his students so they could focus all their attention on their study. Mr. Sear's students felt his dedication and love, and they all vowed to follow in his footsteps. They hoped that after completing their education, they could make positive contribution to society as a way of repaying all the help that they have received from their teacher and from many other people. Although Mr. And his student live a simple life with scarce resources and good classes. The continuous sound of students studying were testimony to their joy and hope. While away at college, Mr. Sear had studied wholeheartedly and make full use of his time to acquire knowledge and wisdom. After completing his study, he looked past the challenges of poverty and lack of resources and transportation in the area and returned home to dedicate himself to teaching. Although things were hard, whenever he heard the sound of his students diligently reading aloud and saw how hard they studied, his resolve to teach became even more firm. We can foresee that in the near future, these seeds will grow into a forest of bohi tree, as one candle after another is kindled. They can illuminate the surrounding and fill the dark corners with light. We need to realize the principle of how this sutra is like a seed. The Buddha Dharma is a seed of wisdom. Although everyone innately possess wisdom, if the causes and conditions are not converged, I'll move it a bit, and we have not yet taken the Dhamma into our heart, this seed cannot sprout and awaken our wisdom. Countless Dhamma Dao can be found among the myriads of people in the world. If we can use the Dhamma to benefit ourselves and others, then when others are able to absorb this Dhamma, we can also influence countless others. This is a principle that one Dhamma can give rise to infinite meaning, and infinite meaning arises from one Dhamma. If we want to realize the principle, then we must become role model. We must not only teach with words, but also teach by example, opening up the field of our mind and spreading the seeds of goodness everywhere. If we can do so, then not only will our mind become a forest of bodhi tree, but we will also be able to sow this seed to others. Then this forest can extend far and wide. Although we are far apart from the time and place where the Buddha lived and taught, as long as we keep this sutta or sutra in our minds, we will surely be able to realize all principles from understanding one truth and thus open infinite Dhamma door. So this principle is very important and very useful. In fact, in life, you can see a lot of this type of example. For me personally, after I went through the process of teaching, when I look back, I came to realize a very important understanding. When I was young, of course, I went through, like every child went through, childhood, education, then I grew up. Then when I graduate from the university, I enter the career field. I work. Then I develop and gain more experience. But this line, because of my past, my nature, my karmic nature, the condition set for my nature to move very early. In fact, in the year 1971, at the age of 17, yes, my nature started to probe. I started to look at the sky, the night sky, at the stars, at everything that twinkle within the horizon and the sky. Then deep inside my nature, there is this inquiry, who am I? What am I? What am I doing here? Then from there, many funny things happen. Then suddenly, deep from inside, the nature gave me an answer. He said, you must meditate to understand. And I got no doubt. I knew I must meditate, but I don't know what meditation is. But that moment was very important. So I started to probe. I started to find answer, because when I was at the age of 17, I was in Form 4, Form 5. I studied science. I studied geography. And I understand a lot of things about the universe, the star system, the planets and all those things. So the question arises, who am I? What am I? Then I realize living beings think they are very special, they are very unique, the ego very big. But my nature reversed all this. I was asking myself, who am I? I'm only one of the few billions of inhabitants on this earth, a human being. Living on a planet which is third from our solar system, the sun. And we are so insignificant, because the whole solar system, the sun, the planets and all this thing, we are just but one speck, a tiny speck in this universe. Because according to science, there are countless stars in our universe. Even our Milky Way is filled with billions and billions of star systems. Then our galaxy, our Milky Way, then our universe is immense. So the question is, we are so insignificant. Every star up there is a potential sun, some bigger, some smaller. So who are we? What are we? We are so insignificant, and yet we take birth as a human being within this planet. So that probe was the beginning of the search. So because of that, immediately after that, when I passed my Form 5, in fact, I did very well. Then when I was in lower six, somebody gave me a book, What Buddhists Believe. Very funny. After Form 5, after SM, I was searching for truth among a group of us classmates, four or five, I think. We used to discuss religious matter. Of course, most of them are inclined towards Buddhism. One of them, the father, is an authority in Buddhism, Dhamma. The father teaches Dhamma, I think professor too. Then he liked to bring the Tipitaka and all the Dhamma book to the school and discuss with us. Then one of our chemistry teacher, Hua Yong, is a Christian, a very good Christian, a very staunch. And he used to debate with him and ask him a question. Then finally, they couldn't agree. Then we decide after the exam, the long holiday, we will visit all the temple, the mosque, the churches, the religious way place. We even went to Hindu temple, Baha'i center, and all this area to discuss, to search for truth. But there was no answer. So because of that, I just let it be. Then I went to lower six. Then during that first semester, when I entered lower six, I was given this book, What Buddhists Believe, the first edition, and the very old edition, the red color one, written by our late Chief Reverend Daman, Dr. K. Sri Dhammananda. The moment I read the book, I was full of joy. Then I realized what my mother do was Chinese tradition, mainly Chinese tradition and belief system. They call it Feng Shu tradition. Yeah. Then there was joy, because initially I thought if there is Buddhism, I would not look at it. Then my mother used to take me to Chinese temples. Yeah. Of all the Chinese temples that she take me to, a lot of them are the dainties one, where they go and ask for what they call, where there is a medium, then they ask for favor from the dainties and all those things. But I only like the Kuan Yin Temple. She used to take me to Kuan Yin Temple. There was one very famous one in my hometown. And when she took me there, I liked that place. Then strangely, I can only pay respect to the four great beings together with Sakyamuni Buddha and Kuan Yin, Pusian, Wen Su, and Tisang Huang Fusa. The rest, the deity, you asked me, my mother asked me to pay respect. I can't. I don't know why. Very strange. Until later only I came to realize. So what I want to let you all understand is how all these past causes and conditions actually set the pace for my cultivation. Then when I started, I had this so-called difficulty or problem. It's not to say I can't develop it, I can't search for it. My initial encounter was, I just want to know what this teaching is all about. But nobody can explain to me, nobody can teach me. Until when I read that book. The moment I read that Four Noble Truths, I knew that's it, no need to search. Yeah. Then like the moment I read that Four Noble Truths, like I know what that thing is, like I heard them before. And I straight away knew it's like the secret of life. When I can understand this, I understand life. That's how my faith become very strong and I become very determined. There are a lot of things very strange. When I enter university, the first day I met the monk, the author who wrote that book. Then he just gave a very scientific Buddhist talk at the Faculty of Science, I remember. Then that night I came back full of joy, full of faith. Then for the first time, I want to try meditation. I don't know what meditation was. But I saw that monk pointing to the forehead. He said, look within. Look within. So I thought that was the mind. In fact, that was the brain. That was where the thinking is all about. The mundane mind is all about. But I didn't know. But it helped me. Because I can concentrate. I can focus. So that very first time I meditate, surprisingly, I went into a very calm state. Then to me, it was like a short period, half an hour at the most. But after I came out of it, my mind became very calm, very still. and that continued for many days. When I looked at the watch, I was already sitting there for 4 hours. I never meditated before. But 4 hours has passed. That was how strange it was. Then deep inside, my nature said, yeah, this is meditation. This is the beauty of meditation. The tranquility, the stillness, the peace within. And that state, my state, lasts almost a week. Yeah. My whole mind was so different, so tranquil, so still. And that time, I also don't know what meditation is. I don't even know what anapanasati is. But I was able to develop that calmness, that peacefulness. And I remember he said, look within. So I looked within and I saw a bright light. So I just focus on it, concentrate on it. Then I went in. Then I went beyond. I penetrated that consciousness. And my consciousness reached the realm of infinite space. That's why it appeared to me like half an hour, but when I withdraw and came out, it was already 4 a.m. in the morning. I decided to meditate midnight after my roommate sleep, and I thought half an hour, you know. So the experience took 4 hours, and it was a tremendous experience and joy, and that's how it started. Then later on, what happened is, I asked for the address of the temple, Brickfield. So when I managed to have my motorbike, I drove there. On approaching Brickfield, I heard the chanting, the Pali chanting, and it sounds so familiar. And I easily can understand the chanting and learn with the card, the chanting card. Then I also participated. Then I went to the library. I collected some booklet, then I studied on my own. So I was looking for a systematic way to understand this teaching, the Dhamma. But nobody can teach or really tell me. Chief Reverend was good. He taught me a lot of the first phase of Dhamma, Parihati, the learning of the teaching of the doctrine. A lot of sutta, and he quoted a lot of things from the Theravada tradition sutta, which I like, the Jataka story, all those things, and I can remember his teaching very well. But I want to go into meditation. So at that time, hardly anybody can teach. They just teach simple loving-kindness meditation, metta. Then once in a while, there is a 3-day, 2-night, or 8 precept retreat where they teach some anapanasati, some teach the rising and falling method techniques and all things. But what I need is an explanation of what meditation is. Then I can develop it myself. Then I want to know something about the mind, the nature. But nobody was able to teach me that until much later. Then over the years, I was listening, learning from children and all the other monks that they invite to give the talk. I even volunteer with my family, my wife, they all to do the recording of the talk. Then I listened to all the tape recording. That was very helpful. Then I met some very good monks too, in between. And some of them turned out to be my teacher. So when I met my teacher, in fact, the first one was Master Shen Hua. When I was in the uni, I met him twice before I graduated. Then after I graduated, when I came to know who he was, I regretted that when I met him, I was not in the position to make offering and all things. As a student, we don't have much extra funds or resource. Then the time also, study is more critical because I study engineering, civil engineering. It's not an easy course, so we had to devote a lot of time. And because of that, I just accept the condition and then let it pass. Then when I came to know who he was later on, because I met one of his kapia who gave me the book, Surangama Sutta, Volume 1, the first edition of the English translation. Wow, that book really changed me, transformed me. Then after that, there were very beautiful, surprising conditions. Suddenly, one of the Christian staff outside approached me one day after my lunch break, came in, knocked the door and said, Mr. Teo, can I see you? I said, can, come. So he took out some like donation template and form. So I thought for the Christian. So I say, okay, no problem. I say, I can donate. But then surprisingly, he told me, it's a lady. He said, no, Mr. Teo, is it? I observe you have been meditating. Lunchtime, you seldom go and have your lunch. Most of the time, you have your meal first, you come back, then exactly 12:45, you lock your room, then you off your light, and I know you meditate. Because he saw me wearing the yellow string. Then I said, oh, I said, Sadhu, then what is this for? He said, my brother-in-law is a Buddhist. He said, there's a very famous monk coming to KL. Oh, I said, okay, I will donate. I opened up, it was Master Shenhua. The whole delegation from the United States, city of 10,000 Buddha, visiting KL, Malaysia. That was what happened. Then because I vowed to make up for the first two times when I missed, because I don't have the condition or capacity to do all the wholesomeness. This time, I want to make sure I make offering and donation. Then it so happened, my wife has a classmate whose brother became a monk and followed Master Shenhua. He was also in the same delegate. You see, condition fall into place. Then I told my wife, yeah, contact her. And we will make offering. So through the brother, we make the offering. I remember it was quite a big offering. I think almost total about $1,000+. But that was a lot of joy. And we make the offering. Then every night I went for the talk, I recorded it and I listened to it. That was the beginning, 1986, I remember, when Kuan Yin gave me the message. Our whole family took refuge under him. That's how it all started. Then everything starts to move, because when I hear his Dhamma, it's a living Dhamma. It's not theoretical Dhamma. He speaks about the mind. Each year, we sing Zhao. So then there's a lot of things about karma, about the three types of pyramid, about vegetarian and all those things, that about cultivation. Then he also spoke on the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. Then he also taught a lot of very beautiful Dhamma. But his Mandarin is very strange. Well, I'm an English educator. He's one China type one, very difficult to listen to. Even my wife, Mandarin school teacher, find it not easy to listen. But for me, if it's Dhamma, I can understand him. So I like a lot of his saying. Fo jiu shi xin, xin jiu shi fo. Wu hui xin, wu hui fo. Wow, all that words has great meaning. Then after that, I started to meditate. Initially, I don't know the real meditation, but somehow Anapanasati came to me. I know how to relax, I know how to wear it, and nobody taught me. Until I learned myself. Then after I met Master Shenhua, the Surangama Sutta helped me, because that one gave a lot of good explanation. Then later on, within that 2-3 years, all my teacher come, the guide come, the teacher come, the book come, everything come, whatever that I need, rise. Then after 1989, technically I don't need any more teacher, but my last guide came. And after that, until today, I have no guide, no teacher. And that's how I learn and develop this ability to meditate and connect to my true nature. So the moment I connect, I inherited then I start to understand many, many things. That's why after 1989, I lie low for 15 years, but I meditate continuously. In fact, 86 onward, I meditated continuously, non-stop, 24 hours, daily mindfulness. I was working. That's why I say it can be done. So because of what happened, my nature transformed. Then when my nature transformed, I was reflecting and contemplating. This Dhamma is so profound, so beautiful, so hard to come by. How can I teach? How can I share? No way. People cannot understand. Then I have the understanding to actually link all the teaching, the Dhamma, connect them together into one beautiful, like, zigzag puzzle, all fall into place. That's why the mind map that my daughter did came from that understanding. Then everything starts to evolve. Then I realize what I have understood. The book never write. Very few people have the understanding of what that teaching was. That's how it all happened. Then when I reflected, after about 15 years, when Yun Chan came to see me the year 2004, then my nature told me, it's about time that you come out and share. Yeah, Yun Chan requested three times. Three times also, I said no. I said, never mind, let things be. Then after that, my nature told me, it's about time. Yeah, the conditions are all there. Everything has fallen into place. But then I said, I told my nature, my worry is not me. It's for those who cannot understand and simply say or react and do funny things. Their karmic will be very severely afflicted or affected. Then inside came the answer. You can set condition to avoid all those things. Oh, then I agree. That's why I call back Sister Yun Chan. And that's how everything happened and fall into place. Then I recall when I was in the university, when I went to Brickfield, every Friday and Sunday, there are Dhamma talks. I will never miss unless I have something on. Most of the time, you can ask my wife, my children. We were there at the Sunday school and we attend to the session very diligently. And I was recording almost all the talks. And that was the condition. So because of that, I reflected back. I said, in the past, I learned from people. The teacher come, the guide come, the book come. I attended all this Dhamma talk, all this retreat, everything. And people actually, through their generosity, they set all this up and gave us the condition to learn the Dhamma. Then I realized you can only learn phase one Dhamma, Pariyatti. When you want to learn meditation and cultivation, those temple or places, you find it very difficult to get a teacher who really can teach you that. So because of that, I reflected and on that, I said maybe the time has come for me to change role. Last time I learned from people. Now is the time for me to teach people and share with people. So this Dhamma or infinite meaning or infinite sutta is very beautiful. You see, under the Mahayana tradition, there was this first Sammasambuddha. They call it Virochana Buddha, the original Buddha. Means he is the first to become Sammasambuddha, the perfection, everything. And all Sammasambuddha tie back to him, that lineage. So because of that, from one comes many, then many comes infinity. But infinity returned to one. But later on, what I realized was, from zero come one, the one Dhamma. Yeah, from the nature, from the void, it arises. Then from one comes infinity. then from infinity it returns. So the principle is the same. The author gave the analogy of a seed. From a single seed, you will plant. Then with the causes and conditions, it arises a plant and a tree, then it fruit. Then it multiply. Then every season, there are a lot of fruits. Then from those fruits, if you know how to plant them, it will multiply. Then it becomes infinite. That's how it grows. So from a single living being, if once he become awakened, like the Buddha, when he arise as a Sammasambuddha, because the sasana stay very long, there will be a lot of cultivator who become enlightened and awakened. And from one, he taught so many. And the many were taught many, many, many. And over the eons and eons of birth and death, the cultivation like the Bodhisattva way, everything, it was spread and create my right, Dharma teacher, or Dharma practitioner. And all this can propagate the Dharma, share the teaching. That's why Bodhisattvas are infinite. Even Sammasambuddha too, there are a lot. But they are very rare, very rare. So this is the added understanding that I want you all to have. Each and every one of us has the potential to teach, to share this beautiful teaching. But first of all, you must develop your own cultivation, your own understanding, and perfect yourself first. Then when you teach, you no longer have any problem or situation. You can explain everything, and you can really benefit living beings, be a blessing to all. So this part is just an added sharing. So hopefully, it will give more meaning to this Sutra of Infinite Meaning. Because this Sutra of Infinite Meaning actually is the teachings of Sammasambuddha. And to become Bodhisattva, to walk this way, to perfect yourself, to become Sammasambuddha, you must learn this teaching. Because this is a very unique, exceptional, beautiful teaching. Infinite meaning arises from one Dhamma. This one Dhamma is all non-appearance. In such non-appearance, there can be no appearance or attachment. With no attachment to non-appearance, this is called true appearance. So this sutta is just like the what they call Diamond Sutta. It's very profound. And the words, if you don't have the Dhamma understanding, you may find it very confusing. It's like what is been described. This one Dhamma is of non-appearance. In such non-appearance, there can be no appearance or attachment. With no attachment to non-appearance, this is called true appearance. I better get my wife to read the Mandarin version, because sometimes this English translation not clear. The next adapter verse.
量义者从一法身，其一法者即无相也，如是无相，无相不相，不相无相，名为是实相。
Okay. So the Mandarin one is 相, non-appearance, and 无相. So this is what they call mark. The one Dhamma is of non-appearance. So they use the English word appearance. It's very difficult to correlate to the spiritual understanding. But the Mandarin word is very precise and very meaningful. Xiang. Mark. So that is the one that is more important. So all these appearances, they are called Xiang. Mark. Even all phenomena. It's a mark. Everything that you come to perceive and know is a mark. Okay, we read on the commentaries. All things, matter, and principle arise from one, we often say. If we grasp one truth, we comprehend all truth. This is very true. However, if we just know something but have not understood it in our heart, and this is called knowledge, we have not yet realized it. there is only Dhamma knowledge, or knowledge. To open, reveal, realize, and enter. So they break into four stages. Yeah? What's the one great cause for which the Buddha appeared in the world? Ancient beings have 84,000 afflictions. So in response, the Buddha opened 84,000 Dhamma doors. He also needed to explain each of these afflictions and reveal each of these Dhamma doors one by one. The reason we are still not able to fully realize this Dhamma door is we fail to deeply enter into it. Enter them. Sentient beings are forgetful. So these 10 of thousand of Dhamma Dao need be thoroughly explained over and over again. That's the reason why last time in the early day when I start sharing, a lot of the Kayamita used to tell me, especially Sister Yuan-chan, he said, "Brother Teo, you always repeat. It's like I repeat it. But the understanding is very different. Every time I may speak on the same Dhamma, like Sri Ande will know. What I taught in the Thursday class is basically that few essential Dhamma. The five spiritual faculty, the five mental hindrance, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then you have the essential Dhamma. That's it. Yeah, I keep on evolving around those teaching, and we have spent more than, I think, 10 over years doing the same meditation, except now in the form of Zoom. But it's still evolving around that essential Dhamma, that few important aspect of the essential Dhamma, like heedfulness, Dhammapanavas, 1 and 2, 21, 22, 23, and the advice of the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 183. So all these are the teachings. So it appears like repeating. But here they say sentient beings are forgetful. Actually, it's not really in that sense that sentient beings are forgetful, because my nature knew it's not easy for this understanding to go in. That's why I had to give you a lot of examples from all anger, from all condition and situation, so that the meaning can stand out, so that people can develop the understanding. So the word that they use here is correct. This Dhamma cannot be realized because living beings fail to deeply enter them. Enter them means develop the realization of it. Awaken to it. So this word enter is the final outcome. So the fourth stage is when you hear the teaching, means the opening up, then it reveals to you the truth. Then after you have understood the truth that is revealed to you, you put it into cultivation, then you realize it. After you realize it, you have to stabilize it. Then only it becomes a part of you. That's how you enter it. Until that Dhamma becomes a part of your nature. Means the wisdom is with your nature. That's how you enter. So this is a very good way of explaining. And I will read on so that you all can understand better. Okay, I read that sentence again. Sentient beings are forgetful. So these tens of thousands of Dhamma Dao need to be thoroughly explained over and over again. So what I share is because my nature knew that most of the Kayamita or Dhamma friends or whoever who has listened to all this sharing, it has not really been entered to, or they have not understood what this thing is, even though it's like introduced to them, then revealed to them, but very few people can grasp it, can understand it, not to say realize it. So because of that, this nature has to repeat. Not until somebody has the understanding, it cannot move on to further teaching, deeper understanding. That's the reason why my nature had to reverse all the teaching. I had to go back to basic, like going back to kindergarten to teach you all the ABC first, then how to form words and other things, then only to develop the understanding. So I had to go back to teach the basic teaching, like the four number two is tree turning, repeat it for many times, give you a lot of example. Then how to link the Dhamma, how to tie the teaching so that it become one teaching that people can understand. So from right view, how all these things come and how the advice of the Buddha come into play to all this understanding. The mind map that connect everything is the result of what we have done. So that to me is the reason why it has to be repeated. But here they mention sentient beings are forgetful. It's not to say forgetful, it's not memory. This Dhamma has to be awakened to. It has to be realized and awakened to. You cannot put into memory. You cannot commit to memory and try to remember them. Well, that is not the way to learn Dhamma. So the repeating of the teaching is because it needs to introduce and reveal this teaching in many forms, many ways, and many situations, so that living beings who don't have their past inheritance of spiritual nature or spiritual affinity to receive all this teaching, or parami to receive all this teaching, they can slowly, through the listening, reflection, contemplation, and inquiry, develop the understanding. Then, upon understanding what is being shared, is they develop the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara. Then after that, they will develop the realization. Then they stabilize that realization until that understanding become a part of their nature. That's how they enter into it. So that is the most important understanding. And I read on. In actuality, infinite meaning arises from one Dhamma. A single awakening brings forth Dhamma, which is true. Thanks for the correction. A single awakening being brings forth Bodhi. Thus the awakened one has awakened themselves, while those who are unawakened remain unawakened. The truth realized by the Buddha, the truth of everything in the universe, can all be encompassed in a single awakening, a wondrous and unwavering state of mind. So this is very beautiful. We must always carefully contemplate. See, again, contemplation come in and closely observe. See, observation with the silent mind. This state of mind, in order to comprehend that our clear and tranquil original nature is infinitely wondrous and still, profound and subtle. This one you need to realize it. That's why you need to realize your true mind. Otherwise, you cannot understand. So I repeat, you listen. We must always carefully contemplate and closely observe, means mindfully, this state of mind, the true mind, in order to comprehend that our clear and tranquil original nature is infinitely wondrous and still, the unconditioned, profound and subtle, in lifetime after lifetime, it neither arises nor ceases. This is very true, because it was never born. It is not less in ordinary people, nor is it greater in the Buddha. Actually, all Dhamma exists in response to our mind. That's why mind makes a day. Indeed, outside of the mind, there is no Dhamma. All Dhamma arises from the mind. This is true understanding. This is beautiful. Then we move on. The mind is like a mirror. Although this mirror is inherently clear and empty, that's why Hui Ning say, 本来无有. Through reflecting external states, it can manifest many kinds of conditions. Therefore, at times when we hear the Dhamma, our mind will be in awe. The Buddha's awakening to the boundless principle of all things in the world is something we can feel. We can also feel the spirit of past Dhamma master and scholar who wrote and compiled the sutras and commentaries after having truly comprehended the Buddha's teaching. Whenever we immerse ourselves deeply into the sutra, so that we forget ourselves, we can experience this state which is true, wondrous and still. When you go beyond the self, the ego, then that nature manifests. The nature is without a center. It's not a being. Okay. In contrast to that stillness, everything in this world is constantly changing or moving or going through the states of formation, existence, decay, and disappearance. I call it in a state of flux, keep on changing. Because of imbalance of the four elements, different countries may be experiencing different disasters during the same period of time. In our modern era, we can experience the working of the world through modern technology. We just need to open our email to receive news from across the globe and realize how vast Mother Earth is. Through observing what happened in the world, we can clearly understand the Buddha's teaching, the principle of all things in the universe. In order to teach us unawakened sentient beings, the Buddha opened up infinite Dhamma door. He hoped we could understand that this infinite teaching arises from one Dhamma, and that this one Dhamma is of no appearance, wu xiang, of non-appearance. Non-appearance is a wondrous and still state. Yeah, because originally there was nothing. Because this state is so wondrously beautiful and exquisite, it can only be experienced and realized. It cannot be described by words, which is very true because it's unconditioned. Nor can it manifest its true appearance. It is said, in such non-appearance, there can be no appearance or attachment. Because there was nothing. No this, no that. So there is no one inside to attach, to perceive. So with no attachment to non-appearance, this is called true appearance. So, no mark is all mark. It's true mark. So all this understanding was surfaced. Everything has its nature, own nature. The flower come from flower seed. The tree come from tree seed. These seeds have either the nature of a flower or of a tree. A flower cannot grow into a tree, but a tree can grow flower and produces oil. Camphor tree yields camphor oil from which we can make mothball. Cypress tree yields cypress oil. They are both tree, but different tree have different nature. And so the different oil extracted from them also has their own unique nature and uses. Thus everything in this world has its own nature. And this different nature manifests in many different appearances. If we analyze those appearances in the end, we find that everything is truly without appearance. But it is within this non-appearance that all appearance manifests. Okay, we will stop here. Then we will open up for our second session, meditation reporting plus Q&A.
Good evening, Brad Teo.
Good evening.
Miss Teo and all calamitous.
Yeah.
Since I've not been working for quite some time,
oh,
this is actually a very good opportunity for me.
Yeah.
I spend my time about three times a week going to the park.
Mm.
And this is a good time for me to listen to Brother Teo's talk.
Oh, sadhu.
Because the reception in my house actually is not good.
Oh, not so good.
A lot of times there's a lot of interruption. Oh. Even like when Zoom session, you see my what is that? It will go off and come back, and sometimes there's nothing at all.
Oh, okay.
So actually, when I'm in the park, when it's very silent, because I go there in the afternoon, so
yeah.
That not many people around.
Not many people. The nature there is very silent and quiet.
Yeah. It is so different.
Yeah.
Exactly. When I listen to the talk, it's like, and I keep listening to the last few thoughts. It was very good, Radio.
Yeah.
Like,
yes. All the sharing recently is very good.
Yeah, it was very good. And yes. I keep listening to Tuesday, the last talk,
Mastering one.
And also the Sunday. That one was very good, very good.
In fact,
the last few talks was very good.
All very, very good. Very
maybe
beautiful.
Because I got more time, I can listen to it properly.
Because nowadays, the sharing is very different. It's about the cultivation, the practice.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are moving.
I'm very glad to hear that a lot of people are having more understanding of the
cultivation and the teaching.
Yes, the cultivation itself. Today when I was reading the Heart Sutta, the one when they are talking about the meditative mind. Must be mindful and heedful within.
Yes.
It's like, then I ask myself, what have you been doing all this while?
Yeah, you can check your mindset. Yeah.
Do you really put into practice?
Just this simple line.
Do you really do it? Or do you like we always say? Yeah, you sit there, you read, or you meditate. But how much of understanding is there?
Yeah, that one is very beautiful.
It's so important. Yeah. It's just like we, or maybe because when working, your mind is
preoccupied with a lot of things. Yeah, but now you are not on the working.
It's like the Dharma has become alive, right?
That is very true. Yeah,
so meaningful now.
Oh.
Yeah, it.
You
I
have
mean,
a lot of understanding, and there is joy. It really starts singing.
There's joy.
Especially then, the appendix you talk about, the Heart Sutta. You go to the appendix. There is a section on the untrained mind and the trained mind. You read the two, world of a different. The untrained mind is heedless. Do all the. The trained mind is so beautiful. You should go through that one. That one is beautiful.
This is the time when I can see that a lot of things I do are very heedless, really heedless. And the mind is like having a life of its own.
Yeah.
It will just pop up. So I take these few days to, a lot of times in the afternoon when I sit down, I will just see the mind. See how it pop out.
Let it run. Then you develop the understanding,
Then, like you always advise us to contemplate and reflect. A lot of times I ask myself, contemplate, how do I really do it?
Yeah.
So I say, okay lah, I start with something very basic, the Four Noble Truths, the second turning. Has to be understood. The first basic ones, of course, we can understand. But let's just say, just take a simple thing as like the body.
Mm.
Okay. For our, we can like you say, like you always like to say, we can rattle off all this.
Yeah.
Can we really accept that this body in time will be no more here?
Yeah.
So of course, it's easy to say, yeah, I understand. Everybody will have to die. But I ask myself, if you were to die tomorrow, how would you feel about it?
Yeah.
Can you understand and accept this? Because you were saying the last, I think the last talk about the four stages of of all phenomena.
The transformation.
The transformation.
Yeah.
Can you understand all this?
Yeah. Unless you have the direct seeing, you cannot awaken to it.
Yeah.
You only know it by word.
You only know it, say, la, whatever you study or whatever we see, you know, in life. But do we really understand it?
Yeah.
Then I say, okay, to contemplate, when the Buddha says this, what do you understand?
Why did the Buddha say this? And what is your understanding? And how can you understand it? These are the inquiry, very important.
The funny thing is, I tell you, Brother Teo, as I sit there, I keep quiet. You know what happened? No? It's like your talk is playing in my mind. You are talking. Yeah. You are giving me the answer.
That is true listening. Where you really listen the essence from your heart. There is no movement of thought or heedless thinking or chattering. To listen that way is not easy. Listen from your nature, silent. Then the other thing I want to add is, like you say, you ask the question, have you really understood? And like just now we discussed about the mind, the untrained mind and the trained mind. So I read to you this appendix 6, then you understand. Training the mind, appendix 6 of Heart Sutta, is very important. And I also draw the trinity to understand cultivation. Everything is there. So I read, you all listen. Training the mind via understanding the essential Dhamma and meditation as taught by the Buddha. These notes were mainly compiled from the various talks given by Brother Teo at Tirathana Buddhist Society, Klang, on the 20th of June, 2014, Thursday class, especially the one held at Brother Suyan's house on the 10th of July, 2014, and March, 2014, Cameron Highland Retreat at Sampo Temple. So this triangle, which is the Trinity, has a C on top at the apex. That is our pure awareness or pure consciousness or the oneness nature. Then I put under the important notes. Essence of mind is your true nature or original nature, the unconditioned, beyond thought, beyond time, and beyond mind. Cannot be perceived or sensed because it's unborn. Stillness, the silent mind, that is your true mind. That is your awareness nature, the pure consciousness without content. Then on the right slope, to create mundane living or experience, you use your senses. S down there is your senses. Senses are your sense bases. Your body has the 5 basic senses and the brain, which is your 6th sense. So this is where the mundane thinking or mundane consciousness arise and pass away. This is what the 5 aggregates of form and mind is all about. They are dependent, originating. Appendix 6. No, not yet. This one is appendix 5. Wait, my daughter is trying to get the page. Appendix 6.
Okay.
Yeah. I wait for her to get the page so that you all can follow me.
Page 243.
243, yes, 243. 243. 243.
12.
Never mind. It's almost there already. No. You continue until this 5 finish. Okay. Yes.
I haven't shared.
This is the picture. My daughter has got it. You wait. Ah, okay. You can see the color one. C is where the pure consciousness is. That S is where the mundane mind or the sense basis. So this is where paticca samuppada arises. So this is to create mundane living or experience. So when you go direct to the sense experience from the pure nature, you aware, then you live life. Yeah. But this mundane living is before your awareness stabilizes. So human beings who are deluded and awakened, their consciousness, the pure awareness, they cannot detect. They don't know that they have that true mind, that true nature, that pure consciousness. So straight away they lost themselves at the senses there, where the dependent origination is, where the paticca samuppada is. So this one is the one that create heedless thinking, mundane living. Then if you want to meditate, you have to go this direction. Ah yeah, my daughter showed that direction. You have to use the silent mind via the direct seeing in sati. The direct seeing. The silent mind will give rise to direct seeing via sati or pure awareness. That's why it's only aware, no thinking, before the perception, before the knowing. The silent mind aware. So through this direct seeing, you awaken or you insight into phenomena and develop wisdom. You is understanding or wisdom. Born of right view, sakkaya ditti, born of the direct seeing. Oh, sorry, samadhiti, not the sakkaya ditti, delusion. Samadhiti, wisdom born of right view or samadhiti. Then give rise to yoniso manasikara, wisdom at the moment of sense experience. So this is connected to your nature. That's why this arrow down here, the horizontal base is for living. So when you have the wisdom connected to your five aggregate of form and mind, which is the senses there, then you can live. This is the real understanding of life, and you live from there. That's how the enlightened being live, from the wisdom they manifest. Then their mind, most of the time, is with the pure awareness, pure consciousness. They seldom think. They most of the time aware, heedful. Then I read on, you will understand. A trained mind is always silent, heedful, peaceful, relaxed, and naturally aware within. It has the clarity born of inner peace and inner awareness to see things as they are, leading to the wisdom needed to arise the wise attention on yoniso manasikara at every moment of sense experience, so that one is always peaceful with the moment to live life. So you can check whether your mind is trained or not. The first sentence is already very beautiful. A trained mind is always silent. Are you silent, or are you talkative, chattering, or heedlessly lost in thought? If you are doing that, means your mind is not trained. You have not developed the meditation. So a trained mind is always silent. Heedful means ever mindful. Peaceful, relaxed means no stress, no problem, nothing. And naturally aware within. Check. Like PG said, if you cannot check, means you have not trained your mind. You don't know what this thing is. Then the next one is, this trained mind has the clarity born of inner peace and inner awareness. But it don't think. That's why it's peaceful. It's aware within. And because it's peaceful and aware within, the silent mind can see things as they are. Clarity. It see exactly what that thing is, not from your views, opinion, and conditioning, and your memory. Because that is not the direct seeing. The direct seeing is from the silent mind, without word, without concept, without anything. So it has the clarity born of inner peace and inner awareness to see things as they are, leading to wisdom needed to arise the yoniso manasikara at every moment of sense experience. Yeah, this one will spontaneously arise, so that one is always at peace with the moment to live life. no matter what situation, anywhere, any place, anytime, you are always at peace, no matter what happened. Yeah. Then third check is the trained mind will listen to you. You want it to be silent, it will be silent. You want it to be peaceful, it will just be so. So this is very important. If you can't do that, it means you have not trained your mind. The fourth point is also very important. You can use it and direct it appropriately to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path leading to heedfulness. Then the next point is it will become like a servant to you. It will serve you well. You can make use of it. It's just like the mind, the form and the mind, the vehicle and the tool. It serves you well. Use it for the good of the many, to be a blessing to all. Because this is a vehicle and a tool. This is not real. This is not you, for you to come to this existential world. So it serves you. So make full use of it. Do not be deluded by it, deceived by it. Do not attach and cling onto it and be afflicted by it. So use it. Then the last one is, a trained mind is ever mindful and constantly meditative. Are you having that mind? Hence is the base from which wisdom will keep on arising. Then whereas the untrained mind is opposite. The untrained mind is heedless, means think a lot, simply think. It thinks a lot and reacts easily to sense experience and is constantly lost in thought most of the time. And as per Dhammapada verse 21, the heedless are as if dead. So this is a very clear check. Is your mind trained? Is it still heedless, lost in thought, think a lot, reacts easily to sense experience, and constantly lost in thought most of the time? Means you are hardly mindful at all. That's why the Buddha says such a being, they are as if dead. The heedless are as if dead. Then the second check is, an untrained mind is like a devil's workshop, and it will make you very evil. You know what is a devil, right? An evil being. You create havoc in you. Then the third point is, the untrained mind actually conditions you to do a lot of things, means you have no control over it. It actually controls you and take over your life, causing you suffering and misery. Then the untrained mind is the mundane mind, the thinking mind, which is heedless. And this mind needs to be trained. So always remember that. Then it is deluded with wrong view. It easily becomes angry, selfish, emotional, and fearful. Hence the suffering. So all these are the characteristics of an untrained mind, a heedless person. Then the untrained mind has no understanding of what is going on in life. It doesn't know what is going on. It lacks wisdom because it is deluded. Then how to train the mind? 6.3 is very important. Without wisdom, living beings are heedless. Hence they suffer because they don't understand life. That's why you need to train your mind to develop wisdom. To understand life, one must understand the secret of life, which is the Four Noble Truths as taught by the Buddha. To understand the Four Noble Truths, one must train one's mind to be heedful, to understand what is going on in life, so as to understand who we are, what we are, and how our mind functions, so that we understand what causes us suffering and how our deluded mundane mind gets muddled up in life. Then the fourth point in training is, the untrained mind is heedless and not peaceful because of the five mental hindrances, which I always teach you all. And they are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and doubt. These mental hindrances will hinder one from entering the meditative state of inner peace with inner awareness. And to overcome these five mental hindrances, we only need to cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya as taught by the Buddha. So all these are very clear and you must understand and develop it to do the training. When the five spiritual faculties are there, the mental hindrance will be gone. and the mind will be trained automatically. That is the reason why you should work on the cultivation of the five spiritual faculties via your puja, your devotional practice, and daily religious routine to maintain mindfulness throughout. Then the phase, the three phases of Dhamma are very important: Pariyatti, Patipatti, and Pativeda. Phase one is Pariyatti, where you learn the teaching. So learning of the teaching of the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha, this one you can learn through reading all day, listening to all the recording, audio, video, etc. Then you can also learn it from Dhamma discussion, attending seminar or Dhamma talk and all those things. Then after you have learned the teaching, phase two is Patipatti. You have to put it into practice or cultivation. You are putting the Dhamma you have learned into practice in daily life so that you can be, it can become a living reality. That phase three is the best, Pativeda. You reap the fruit of your cultivation or hard work. You get to live the life of enlightenment. So this is the most beautiful. And down there, there's a table that explain to you the five spiritual faculty, how you cultivate them to develop the phase one Dhamma cultivation, which is Pariyatti. So Sutamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, and all these things. So the learning of the doctrine to develop a very stable understanding of the Dhamma. Then Patipatti, how you apply the spiritual faculty of Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. For phase one Dhamma, Pariyatti, you need faith, Sada, and Virya. Then when you put it into practice, you need Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. So all this is the understanding. So you have the third turning wisdom, Bhavana Maya Panya, wisdom born of Bhavana or the meditative training. Then the moment the mind is silent without thought, you are already aware in Sati. No need to train, no need to do anything. So use the silent mind to cultivate, to meditate, to develop the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. That is the meditation as taught by the Buddha to become heedful. Then a truly silent mind can see the real Dhamma. We are seeing things as they are. Then I have this advice, relative advice. Spiritual faculty must be stabilized until they become balas or unshakable spiritual powers. It is not difficult to cultivate Patipatti if you really determine and sincere. Just cultivate Sada, Virya, Sati, leading to the Samadhi. Sati, when stabilized, will accumulate into Samadhi until they are unshakable. Then the mental faculties will become spiritual powers or balas. Then wisdom will keep on arising and you will awaken. So this is how you develop the final cultivation of phase two Dhamma cultivation, Patipatti. Then phase three, Dhamma cultivation or Pativeda. Dhamma cultivation is, phase three of Dhamma cultivation is Pativeda, means reaping the fruits of your hard work or cultivation. Means this is the most beautiful phase of one's life when one can really truly live life to the fullest, leading a noble life, means life of an enlightened being, living the life of an awakened one. So all these are taught there. You should read through this. Then important of Sati to walk the path of Dhamma 6.4. They are all there. Important advice for meditator. You have to read yourself. Then the pitfall of thought-based meditation. Everything is there. Then how to use the silent mind to develop Samasati. They are all there. So this is the most beautiful section, the appendix. Then the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought or negative mental states, they are all there. So you already have all the Dhamma. So you have to really make use of it. So the five ways, the third and the fourth way is the most beautiful. So you have to develop them. They are the meditative way. Then all the understanding are there. So appendix six, remember. Okay, PG, thank you so much for bringing up such beautiful condition. Eh? So what I want to explain is, if you have all this with you, as Kaya Mita, if you don't really sincerely with the faith going cultivate and develop the understanding and the stability of it, what will happen is, if this life, with this window, with the sasana, with the understanding that has been shared and taught, you also cannot stabilize this cultivation and understanding until it becomes a part of you, until you have realized that Dhamma and enters the Dhamma. My question to you is, what will happen the next time you come without this condition, without this asana? You don't stand a chance at all, I tell you. That's why this life, you must stabilize all this and make that vow. Take that bodhisattva away, plant the seed of bodhi. It is worth it, because only this life, these few years, when you do it, all of your future life is taken care of. All of your cultivation is already in the proper path. And you will not debate, because the bodhisattva way that I taught you, all the yellow card, if you do it sincerely, it becomes so beautiful. You can walk this way even without sasana. Then you will have all those right view, right understanding. Then you know how to develop the affinity with all the great beings. Then you know how to develop all the miscellaneous vow and other things to break your coming obstruction, to cultivate perfection of merits, wholesomeness, so that they can help you in time of need and other things. So everything is already there. So determine strongly to plant the seed of bodhi sincerely with faith and persevere, then the work is done. If you don't do it this life, imagine if this life is such teaching condition, also you cannot stabilize the understanding to realize this teaching, do you stand a chance in the future? You don't stand a chance. All this vow, you have to make it when you have the understanding. Then it becomes very strong. It will go into your nature. The bodhi mind will be planted deep. Then even nature in future. And it's not difficult. This line, put in the effort, persevere, determine strongly, invoke power of merits, like Engbi. She will be successful because she has this real intent. Like that day, she brought out that topic. He wants to cultivate perfection of virtue, wisdom, blessing, so that in time of tribulation or what, this parami can help her. And she somehow keep on reminding herself, am I sincere enough? Have I done enough? Have I developed all this? So this is what cultivator will do. That's why in the early days, I remember when I cultivate, I was dead serious, very determined, and from deep inside my nature, I vow, I planted the seed of bodhi, and I determined to walk this way, take the path, cultivate the bodhisattva way, did all the important vows and aspirations. So this is how cultivation can be developed. Okay, so let us rejoice. Eh? Sadhu, 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 and thank PG for the good condition. So tonight sharing also very good. Eh? Okay, PG, now back to you. Eh? This is a part that I want to add in so that it will complete what you brought up. Eh? PG?
Thank you, Baratio, for the advice. I will seriously, seriously do it. Because I actually, this was what I was talking to Polian about, you know. Yes. If this life with all the conditions and can't do it, I don't know how we're going to.
Yeah, in future you don't.
How we're going to do it in our future lives?
With the sadhana and such condition, with the kayamita force and the kayamita ship's condition, you have to really sincerely develop it. And it's so beautiful. And so many of the kayamita has progressed and done it. They are so beautiful. That's why my nature rejoices. And like I forecast earlier on, you remember a few years back, I said, year by year, faster and faster the kayamita force will move. And more kayamita will move. Then if the MCO over or CMCO over, if we have our next retreat at Sampo Temple, I tell you, a lot of you all will transform. This time the retreat will be very different, where the understanding is there, the faith is there, and many of them are cultivators. And when you are there, the nature's being, all the special being with their nature there, and Sampo Temple has that nature. All the beautiful beings, they are all there waiting for the condition. Like our earlier retreat, actually they are all there, but most of you all are not ready. That's why not everybody can benefit. The way we rejoice and do all those things, a lot of you all don't know what is going on, but my nature knew. That's why I knew that place is unique. But that was the first place where I really connect to my nature. In the year 1989, when I was having my 5 days retreat there, that meditation retreat was beautiful, because I went into this stillness straight away on the first day. Then I didn't talk at all. I seldom speak. I was still, silent. I do my walking meditation, my bowing, my formal meditation. Then I relax, silent. Then my nature connect. Then I went into that stillness. That time was a glimpse. But good enough. After I came out of it, my nature become very different. Then I told you all, after that, I was so mindful throughout the day. Until the abbot also knew. That's why he was staring at me on the hilltop when I was contemplating and reflecting, that then my nature rejoiced and I read that back, and he can feel me. The effort was very good. Then after that, I remember when I came down that time, I was sitting in front of the bus, I told you all, remember? Then I saw from that true mind, that true nature, how all the sense data come in. Then I knew the form and mind is going to go back to the mundane living. But you can see, during that time, the Paticca Samuppada, the dwelling, dependent orient, you can really witness them. You can see how sense data come in upon contact, what happened, then the content of consciousness, like slow motion, everything. It does not behave like normal, heedless, thinking mundane mind anymore. It's full of awareness. And it knows what the mundane mind is, what that movement is, what that sense data is. Then upon contact, what happened, it will not stir, it will not react, it will not create all those confusion. No, everything is like a lot of clarity. That's how you awaken, you understand the whole movement behind it. So this is most beautiful. Okay, so we look forward to that. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, PG, you can wrap it up. You got 3 more minutes.
Brachio, from my understanding, when I make my aspiration to always have right views and right understanding. Okay, the thing is, I ask myself, why do I not have even right view? First thing that comes to my mind is, first thing, I can't even accept, the most basic thing is accept people or things as they are.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you see, just like a simple case, when it rains, we say, "Aiya, raining ah." Then our mind will go off.
Yeah,
poor people, they cannot have the pasar malam and all that. Then I ask myself, when people say as right as the rain, that is precisely what it is.
Yeah,
things as they are.
Yeah. Condition like that, things be like that. But these are your habitual tendency, your habitual thinking. Habitual stirring of the mind reaction. But you can see now your awareness come in and help you. Because when you are doing that, you know this is heedless thinking. This is habitual tendency.
Yes.
That's how I try to teach, Padmasuri, all this, and even earlier on Song and all. But this habitual tendency, very difficult to root out. You need very stable wisdom and understanding. You need to develop all the understanding from all aspects of Dhamma anger. Then only it can become very powerful or very penetrative. Then it has the ability to root out. Then when it root out, all this, no more meaning. And you know, and you won't go and like think that way. Of course, sometimes when you cultivate loving kindness, compassion, like you pity the living being, this one can arise. But you no longer perceive them with negativity. You know, it's their karma. But then you can radiate love and metta. Then sometimes you can try to invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for this to reverse. I did it once because it let me know how that nature can actually be a blessing. Though I told you all, you know, one day I was at the office about to come home. I think about 5:30 p.m. also about Pasar Malam time. Suddenly, dark cloud. The whole place was like the thunder, the rain is going to pour anytime. Then immediately my nature knew and I know. Out of love and compassion for all those Pasar Malam people, because they prepared all the food already. Then if this type of heavy downpour come, they cannot sell and very difficult, and most of them will suffer losses. Then my nature has this pure wish. It wants to help if possible. Then I invoke power merits. If there is causes and conditions, it's for the good of the many. Let this thing not happen. And you know what happened? Oh, I drove back mindfully with faith everything. That surprisingly, oh, like the weather was holding, oh, the dark cloud, everything, no, not pouring, nothing. Oh. Then when I reach home, it's like you can sense that at any one time it's going to pour. I immediately went to my altar. I sat, I meditate, I silent everything and send that pure wish out for the good of the many. Yeah, if it does not affect any other thing, yeah, may arise the causes and conditions for this dark cloud and rain, everything to disperse, and may the Pasar Malam people have a fine day to do their business. Within less than 3 minutes, I remember, I sense everything is clear. Then I came out of that altar meditation, then I walk out. I saw clear sky, full of joy. Then I went out to the Pasar Malam, I was full of joy. Then my nature was telling me, living being doesn't know what happened, but the great beings, they know what happened. But that was an understanding for my nature. Then I knew this pure wish, when you have developed the cultivation, is very powerful. It can give rise to causes and conditions. It can like overcome a lot of things. But I qualify it if it's for the good of the many. If it does not, because sometimes there is a reason for all this. We are coming and all things. But when there is condition, it will manifest and unfold. And you will experience all this as you cultivate. But this one, you need to have a level of cultivation. It's very different to realize this and to experience all this. That's why for your question, you don't worry, BJ. Whatever right view you make aspiration is because you invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to have the right view and all things. But at the same time, you must be determined with the faith and other things to make sure that you are cultivating it. Some people, they just make that aspiration. Then they thought everything will be taken care of. Cannot. It's just like you say, imina punyang kamina, like parroting like that. By the power of this punya means the merits, may arise the causes and going for me to avoid the foolish, may I avoid the wise, so the enlightenment in the here and now can be taught by the Buddha, advised by the Buddha. But if you are like parroting, not sincere, without the faith, I can guarantee you not much effect. Because first of all, you must determine to understand that this one need faith, sadha, virya, and you have to commit yourself and do it sincerely. Then after you do it, you have to determine to understand who are the heedless. Do you understand? If you cannot understand who are the heedless, like how to train your mind, the untrained mind, these are heedless. So you can recognize them. And who are the enlightened ones? You must have this to support you. Otherwise, the vow cannot take effect. So your faith, your sincerity, your perseverance is very important. Then you must do the necessary base work to prepare yourself. So you do all those things, then through causes and conditions, where you invoke power of merits, you will meet with the right people, you will develop the right understanding, then you will straighten your view and awaken. So don't worry about at the moment, how come I have still have this heal? It's not you. It's the stability of wisdom not there. The habitual tendency still come. But now, at least, you have the awareness to be aware. Because you fail to have the wisdom to accept things as they are. People is the way they are. My daughter want to add in something. Yeah.
Sister Fiji. Okay, let me just Amitofo. The example, actually, when my dad said accept things as they are, and then everything arises because there are causes, conditions behind it. Actually, I realized also that it applies to the thinking. I've had that thought before. That when it rains, that then a lot of justification why it shouldn't rain. Then when I trace the factors, right, there are causes and conditions for my thought to manifest this way. And when I really trace it back down, deep down, I believe that raining is worse than not raining. Not raining is better. I have that principle. I think that's the term they use. that preference, that bias in me. That no rain is better than rain. It is not true. It can be something I prefer to believe, but if I prefer to believe that, I can also prefer to believe raining is better than not raining, because raining grows trees and everything. It's just which aspects we want to see. Both sides of the coins are there, but we choose to take one side. We choose to be biased. We have been training ourselves to take sides. So that's why we always jump to a reaction. We always choose, I prefer this, don't rain. Then I notice that behavior of mine. Then what I start to see is, I start to ask myself, is it true? It's better not to rain. Is it true? Then I really ask myself, you really think so? Then I start to see, no lah. Totally no rain 6 to 5 days a year. Something is wrong, right? Then I'm not seeing reality, right? I'm being in my own dream world, right? That I expect the whole world to be that way in my head. Then I start to really see how my brain works. Then when I start to reverse all these assumptions I make of the world, then I really start to see maybe this is the glimpse of equanimity. I start to see rain also I'm happy, no rain also I'm happy, I start to see the benefits of either one. I hope this helps to decondition.
Thank you.
So, just to add a little bit more, that this will actually make it very beautiful and perfect. I always share with you all, remember, I even told my daughter today, these are called duality, means the positive and negative aspect of our mundane mind thinking process. Your duality pertain to the condition. Listen, within the condition world, existential world, duality exists. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. People talk about right and wrong, like the way my daughter perceived it. Then she realized, after talking to me, like the Buddha said, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions. So these causes and conditions, they are already preset. So you can't change that reality at that moment. But if you want to have better life, better understanding, moment to moment, you can still introduce new condition. That is what life is all about. Then when you accept that reality, that is the beginning of wisdom. Because you can accept there is no more duality, no more right and wrong, no more good and bad, no more perceiving it this way or that way. Because thing is just way, the way it is. Condition like that, things will be like that. I cannot choose. That's why Krishnamurti is very wise. You remember last time I shared with you all, wherever there is choice, there is, cannot remember, you confusion, yes. Remember this. Who choose? The egoic mind, mundane mind, habitual tendency choose. The thing is just the way it is. There is no such thing as right or wrong. He is the way he is. She is the way she is. The world is the world. Condition like that, things will like that. Nature is suchness. Ta-ta-ta. So when you understand this, you straighten your view and you break free. And to have this understanding, you must understand the Dhamma very deeply, profoundly, until it's very stable, until it becomes a part of you, until you can understand from all aspects, like what my teacher Ajayantra taught me. We choose, accept everything as natural. So powerful, that statement helped me so much. Where everything is like what the Buddha said, following nature's law, condition like that, things will be like that. So he used a different explanation. We choose, accept everything as natural, then you will always be at peace. Then only mighty nature rolling by, no reality. All these are very powerful. Then the Buddha's teaching, imas bin sati idang hoti, when this arise, that arise. Imas bin asati, when this ceases, that ceases. Idang arhoti. So it's so beautiful. Dependent originating. When this arise, that arise. He is just the way he is. Condition like that, things will be like that. When condition ceases to be, the phenomena ceases to be. So everything becomes so beautiful. Then your Dhamma understanding stabilizes. Then when you insight into phenomena and awaken, then you connect the essential Dhamma, Sabbe Sankara Anicchang. Then you can shortcut Sankara Anicchang, Sankara Dukkang. But every time you test it, it's correct. You want things your way, which is not nature way, you suffer. That's why even this Bhayankati also know you cannot fight against reality. If you go against reality, you suffer. And that's why he said, question your thought. Question your egoic mind. Is it true? Are you sure it is the truth? Then after that, you continue to say it's the truth because you are very stubborn. Because your mundane habitual tendency say, yeah, the fellow did this to me. Wa. True, la. He is what I think or perceive to be. And then Krishna Bhayankati will let you have the answer. If you think that thought, what happened to you? There is a wrong thought. You suffer. You become tormented. You become miserable, afflicted. Then why do you think that thought? Because of your delusion. You haven't straightened your view. If you don't listen to your thought and believe your thought, before enlightenment, the deluded being, the thought are all wrong thought. That's why it brings about affliction. Then the fourth line of questioning is the answer. Without that thought, who are you? What are you? You are peaceful. Before that thought arises, that wrong thought, you are full of joy. You are very natural, very peaceful. You are very calm. You are very happy. So all these are skillful means to stabilize your understanding. But the most powerful one are the essential Dhamma. Rupang anicchang, rupang anatta. Vedana anicchang, veda. See the five aggregate clearly. That all these five aggregate are not what you think. Like what the anatta lakana taught you. So reflect, contemplate from all angle. You develop the understanding. Then as you silence your mind, you develop clear insight. You insight into phenomena, awaken. Then you can realize truth. You can see things as they are. The mundane mind will not interfere. your true nature, that one will give rise to the direct seeing, the pure awareness. That is the one that gives rise to wisdom and understanding. Then with that developed stable, use that to live by. That is what Dhamma is all about. Okay, so this is the part that I want to
add. Yeah, thank you, Brother Teo. Dependent origination is one of the things that I told myself I will want to contemplate deeply because I find that it's very useful.
Yes, then you will understand the Dhamma. Tonight sharing is very beautiful. Because all this reasoning analysis from the mundane mind come from the habitual tendency to delusion. And because of that, living beings are caught. And always remember, duality pertains to the conditioned world. That one is when you are living life, you can share with people, talk with people about duality. Otherwise, you become very funny. One of a kind. Your duality exists. They say it like that. Yes, it's like that. Well, there is duality. But you understand what duality is. So you do your duty. You live. You can participate. You can be with the ordinary. You don't have to be out of the normal. Everything also speaks the Dhamma way. Oh no, this is impermanent. This is, forget about it. When you are in the midst of society, when people say, oh, rain already. Ayo, why it rain? Never mind. Well, he's the way he is, understand? Then you can help make him understand. Then maybe he can. You can try to give a solution so that he can have a better understanding of the duality. So to you, maybe rain is not so conducive because you didn't bring umbrella. Or you cannot go to your car. It's troublesome. But do you know, the farmer or the sweeper, they depend on rain to have a good harvest. Of course, not too much rain. So there is what they call understanding. So the way you perceive things will condition your mind to react and stir. So when you don't perceive with duality, you see things as they are, then your mind is at peace. It does not stir anymore. So that is the part you are trying to realize and understand, PG. So all this, listen to it again, it will help you. Eh? So sadhu.